The Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome to The Spirit of Jazz. This is Bill Carter.
And I'm Jeff Kellum. Bill, one of the albums that I grew up with was Belafonte Sings the Blues. It was a very moody and somewhat dark album, but boy, I sure identified with it on occasions. I looked up the personnel and I didn't recognize very many of the names at all who were playing on the album. I think there was a wonderful trombonist who played on this thing. And, you know, one of the questions when I would interview people on the radio, when I interviewed musicians, was what makes the blues? And sometimes the answer would be about the lyrics, and sometimes it would be a musical answer that I didn't understand. So now I'm going to put that question to you. What makes the blues?
Well, the musicologists, of course, are all over the map about this. I think the best thing I would point us toward and point our listeners toward is a chart by Mary Lou Williams, the noted pianist. She had the jazz tradition as a tree with many trunks. You know, there's a ragtime branch and there's a swing branch and all of this bebop branch. But the roots, the word for the roots, the word was suffering.
Oh, man.
That this is music that emerges from authentic and deep human suffering.
Yeah.
And it might be suffering that was racially motivated or racially received. It could do with poverty. It might have to do with a general economic deprivation. Mm-hmm. And it might be the suburban kind that I know, where people are going through pain and they smooth it over or try to rush through it as quickly as they can. But it's that aching, gnawing suffering at the heart of a lot of human existence. And I think it's always with us.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sometimes helps us to play the blues in a recording when we're feeling blue.
That's right. There's a story that Garrison Keillor told one time years ago in the old publication, The Wittenberg Door, and they were interviewing him. And he talked about his son was playing on an electric guitar and playing this just blues-drenched riff and ache. And Keillor thinks, you know, where is this coming from? I give him money. We live in a nice neighborhood. Everything is generally okay with our household. Where is this coming from? And then he reflected and thought, all of us have this within us. That's part of the resonance here. It's like a harmonic, rhythmic resonance. And it becomes one of the major aspects and factors of jazz.
Vocally, you think of Billie Holiday, who had a blues voice just to begin with. Before you heard any words or heard the lyric or the poetry, there was someone who epitomized, I think, the vocal blues on a piano without the vocals to express the pain of losing a loved one or the injustice that you felt personally or socially. What do you do on the piano to make it sound?
Well, let me just say a word about the harmony. A lot of the blues and the blues kind of sensitivity, I mean, the blues is actually an authentic form now. It's a 12-measure form, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But it's actually a major chord. So here's a major chord. And it's also a minor chord. And here's a minor chord. And listen to what happens when you put the minor chord on top of the major chord. The distinction is that third note of the scale in a C scale, that would be an E, and the minor chord would be an E flat. And the yearning of the blues musician is to touch that that dissonance, but also to reach for that tension that's between those two notes. And I think a lot of beginning guitarists, particularly early in the blues tradition, would just find that they could bend a note. Mm-hmm. And there was an emotional resonance with that. And they would begin to construct songs like that.
Yeah. I remember when you and I went to the Saratoga Jazz Festival, and it ended with Buddy Guy.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, we thought that Tony Bennett that night was going to be the headliner, but he was followed by Buddy Guy.
Yeah.
And talk about, you know, there's blues epitomized in that, in those strings on that guitar.
Oh, yeah. He was working the crowd as much as he was working his guitar.
He brought it into the crowd. He walked around the audience playing. And if that doesn't bring the blues home, I don't know what would.
Yeah. And very early in jazz history, whether it's Louis Armstrong or even Jelly Roll Morton a little bit before him, they were hearing this sound which came up from the people. My hunch is that this blues sensitivity is one of the aspects that made trained, cultured, European-based musicians flinch a little bit and regard this as illegitimate music.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, the greedy clubs in Chicago or New Orleans or St. Louis.
Well, and the music itself was a little gritty. It wasn't always precise. And that is something that when I still occasionally work a little bit accompanying a choir, they can't quite get it because they're stuck to what's on in print versus what's heard and what's felt.
Yeah.
And they're conditioned by the rehearsals. Damien Snead, who is a gospel pianist, jazz pianist, has worked a lot with Quentin Marcellus's Abyssinian Mass. He had a bit on how to play gospel music. And he had three singers, and he was going to line out something, and they're going to respond to it in kind of a triad. He was setting them up with this rhythm. And it was astonishing how quickly that music was smoking along. Here's what James Cone, the African-American theologian, said. The blues is a secular spiritual. It's the same kind of impulse of the spiritual, but done without referring to God or the gospel or Jesus or the Spirit. Although it is, as we've talked in previous episodes, a dotted line between the two. The human feeling is the human feeling.
Sure. So we've mentioned at the beginning, Harry Belafonte and Billie Holiday and Buddy Guy and people of color. How does a person of privilege play the blues? Do they have a right?
Are they suffering in any way? And how do they find expression? I mean, I don't know how many teenagers get a guitar and as a way of rebelling against their privilege, they crank it up and annoy their parents. I mean, there's just something about that, whether it goes into the rock tradition or the country music tradition,
yeah,
or the jazz tradition. The jazz tradition has developed into something a bit more harmonically sophisticated, but the feeling still at the heart of it is the same.
Yeah.
So how about if I demonstrate? Let's give a little listen to a piece I wrote years ago. It's on our Dancing Day album. It's called Down Goes Babylon. One of my seminary professors, Dick Armstrong, wrote a text based on the prophet Isaiah. I wrote a melody and I gave it to the band, and then we called in Jackie Tara Washington, a wonderful singer from the Ithaca, New York area, and she laid it down. Give this a listen. We'll play a little bit of this.
Down goes Babylon, down, down. Down goes Babylon, down, down. Down goes Babylon, down, down. Way down, way down, way down. Dark at night, then will the moon
So that's called Down Goes Babylon.
Yeah. Unfortunately, shortly after the album came out, we ran into international difficulties with Babylon. Originally, this was a kind of a blues of a sort. The prophet is denouncing the foreign nation that came and invaded his country.
Well, that's a contemporary issue today. What was the root of the blues then continues to be the root of the blues now. Yeah. And that's why we continue to write music. We don't, the blues tunes are not all old songs. You've written new songs that express the blues. You know, we've talked about churches have praise bands, and you've said, oh, but they really ought to have lament bands too, because when you look at the Psalms, you're half and half here.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Let's give folks another clip. We did an album years ago based on the Psalms. I tried to listen to the Psalms of Israel, and particularly the ones that I did not know, you know, beyond the five or six I memorized when I was in Sunday school years ago.
Sure.
So I was discovering all these laments. Two-thirds of the Psalms are complaints against God or against neighbor. One of them is actually J.S. Bach's favorite psalm, Out of the Depths I Cry to You, O Lord. So this is a psalm without words. We had Steve Gilmore, the notable bass player, playing the melody down low in the bass.
Yeah.
And it's not a blues per se, but it touches upon that sensitivity. And then we'll play a little bit of the improvisation that comes out of it. So this is Out of the Depths.
Thank you.
So that tune is called Out of the Depths, It Comes from Your Psalms Without Words, double CD.
That's right. And it's based on Psalm 130.
Yeah, and it's based musically too, with that bass playing the melody.
Bach understood that human passion, human depth needs to find expression, and did so in ways that to this day are almost overwhelming in their honesty.
Well, and it ranges from being the victim of some fickleness, for example, to outright anger and bitterness.
Right.
Musically, this can be kind of just sad music, or it can rail. I can picture a saxophone. I can picture a flute, for heaven's sakes, expressing the sadness, the depth of my disappointment or my rage.
That's right. Yeah. Let's remember back a couple months to the episode we had on hope. Hope unfolds slowly. It doesn't come all at once. And that is so much of our human experience. I go back to Mary Lou Williams again, and I'm looking forward to a future conversation we'll have with Deanna Witkowski, who has written a book about Mary Lou Williams, that famous jazz pianist whose career spanned many decades. She took a break from playing for a while, and she developed a ministry, actually an outreach to down and out musicians. And she was literally pulling them out of gutters and then taking them back to her apartment and doing what she could to make them well, get them off the substances they were addicted to, or helping them out finding employment.
The ministry of healing.
Yeah, she held that tension very well. She said, music is our medicine. And she also said, music is our prayer.
Yeah.
And in between, there was this expression of compassion, which for her was directly informed by Dorothy Day and the Catholic worker movement. Extraordinary soul. And there are many souls who have done the same, but have never been written up in biographies or studied.
Yeah, I didn't know very much about Mary Lou Williams at all until I read Deanna Witkowski's book. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. And certainly Mary Lou Williams had struggles of her own.
That's
so
right.
Here was the wounded healer.
And she never achieved the full recognition of her ability. But her work is now being reevaluated and rediscovered.
Yeah. You have another piece?
How about if we hear a Christmas carol that's unusual? It's
right.
Called the Coventry Carol. And it's one of the few Christmas carols that mentions King Herod. It's a bit of a lullaby. The mother sings to the child, don't worry, but Herod is still out there. So I was thinking about this. I kind of set this for some horns. It's the carol played quickly, but then it proceeds into a bunch of blues music, minor blues. It stays there, sad, passionate, and a bit unfinished because, of course, Herod's still out there.
Yeah.
So this is Coventry Carol.
Thank you.
music from the Fragile Incarnation CD, and it's called The Coventry Carol. Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.